Welcome to Fresh Take, where we at Florida Organic Growers speak to food systems experts about topics related to organic and sustainable agriculture, healthy lifestyles, and the environment. To help us continue our programs at FOG, including our podcast, consider becoming a sponsor. For more information on sponsorship, check out our Get Involved page on our website, www.foginfo.org. Hi, everyone. It's Andy at FOG. Just wanted to pop in and remind you that the 2024 Organic Food and Farming Summit is coming to Tampa in April, and tickets are currently on sale on our website at www.foginfo.org/summit. And now, onto the show.
Hello, and welcome to our latest episode of Fresh Take. In today's episode, we're preheating our mental ovens and embarking on a delightful journey of sustainable baking. Whether you're a seasoned baker looking to adopt sustainable practices or a novice eager to learn more about how baking can be environmentally friendly, this episode promises to satisfy your cravings for knowledge and tips from sourcing local and organic ingredients to reducing food waste and exploring eco-friendly baking techniques. Joining us today is our special guest, Joy Cullinan, who worked professionally as a baker and pastry chef for over a decade and is now working for Florida Organic Growers as our local nutrition and outreach coordinator. Welcome to the show, Joy.
Hi, Lana. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you today. This is such a unique episode since we typically cover sustainability in the world of agriculture, but today we are highlighting a method of cooking we don't often get to highlight and is enjoyed by pretty much everyone, wouldn't you say?
I sure think so.
So I really want to know, you know, having you on our team has been so lovely, and I'm always curious to find out what your roots are, and specifically, how did you come across your love for baking? Was there a moment in your life where you felt a clear connection and decided to pursue it?
Sort of. I think, like a lot of people, I grew up baking with my grandmother, and my mom was also a great baker. And then after college, I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I started working at a bakery, and they just kind of threw me in the kitchen without any training or anything. And I realized, oh, I really like this. And yeah, I could probably do this better. So I went to pastry school, and then I worked around the city, around New York City, for a few years in different bakeries and restaurants. And then I came back to Florida and started working on a farm. And that's how my interest in kind of farming and baking and my degree in social work all kind of came together.
Oh, wow. See, I didn't even know you had a degree in social work. So that makes things even more interesting. And yeah. I love that you stumbled upon this journey all the way to farming. And it seems like a lot of folks at some point in their food systems career fall into that sort of path. But, you know, baking is such a unique niche area. And I'm really curious to know, especially for the people listening, you know, we've all definitely heard the term, the buzzword sustainability, and obviously of baking, but maybe not the two put together. So could you tell us what sustainable baking really means?
Yeah, so it's an approach to baking. It prioritizes, you know, minimizing environmental impact, reducing waste in the kitchen, and also supporting your local communities. So supporting local growers, buying local flour if you can, even milling your own flour if you can.
Wow.
And then just supporting local bakeries that are also doing their part to make baked goods sustainably.
Right, right. So you mentioned buying local flour or milling your own flour, which that just blew my mind. I would never even think of having the opportunity to create my own flour. Is that something that you've done before in your own home?
Not personally, but I have taken a workshop on the subject, and it is not as hard as you think it would be. It's really just a matter of getting the wheat and grinding it. You do need special equipment, but it is a really fun and sustainable activity, and it definitely really rewarding too. So you really had a hand in the whole process of baking.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds really fun and like such a unique process to go through the beginning to end stages of creating your own flour, I want to explore with you the alternative ingredients in terms of sustainable baking and specifically for flour. I know it is pretty essential to most baking recipes, and we always see all-purpose flour in our grocery stores. And quite frankly, I use it for everything, but I know there are so many different types of flours out there. So what are the alternative flours that you recommend, and how do you suggest that they utilize them?
Yes. So I do use, all-purpose and bread flour in my kitchens. I haven't completely transitioned away from them. And you can get different kinds in the grocery store that may be regeneratively grown. Regenerative agriculture tries to actively restore natural resources rather than taking away the natural resources, or even, leaving it the same.
Right.
So those are available in stores, but my personal favorite flours and alternative flours are rye and buckwheat. Rye is one of those flours or crops that can really improve the soil. It's really hardy. It's a great cover crop. A lot of farmers use it over the winter or over the summer in some cases, like in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And it tastes really good. It's really earthy and nutty. It goes really well with things like caramel, browned butter, chocolate. It also has a low gluten content, so it's really good in not necessarily flour, but in cakes and pastry and cookies. So that's one really good alternative.
Yeah. Okay, great.
And then the second alternative that I can think of that tastes really good and is actually good for the earth is buckwheat. So buckwheat is not actually wheat. It's a fruit, and it's related to rhubarb.
Wow. I would never know that.
Yeah. And it grows quickly in poor soil. So you can even grow it in Florida in nice sandy soil. It grows quickly. Like, it matures to the harvest in just 90 days compared to wheat, which is at over 200 days.
Wow, what a difference.
Yeah. And it has a really nice grassy sort of floral flavor. It's really good in sweet and savory dishes. It's good with chocolate, and it's good with cheese. So it's very versatile.
My goodness, I've just learned so much about just two different flours or flour alternatives. And, I've seen them, I've heard of them, but have I actually used them? Not really. And I think it's because, as consumers, we're kind of afraid sometimes of ingredients that we're not familiar with or often see in recipes. So are these alternatives, rye and buckwheat, you mentioned that they're best to use in specific types of dishes. So rye goes really great with cookies, cake, and pastry. And then you mentioned buckwheat, which is great in sweet and savory dishes. So they seem pretty dynamic in terms of their uses.
They're really versatile, and, they can be intimidating. I definitely get that. But you can start by just swapping in rye or buckwheat for a portion of the flour in your favorite recipe. So you don't have to go all in and, just start baking with rye right away. Your favorite recipe may work perfectly well with just like a 50-50 blend of all-purpose and rye. So that's a good way to kind of ease into it.
That's a great tip. Yeah, because I think it's all about baby steps. And for those listening that might be a little bit afraid to venture outside of the all-purpose flours or ones that you're used to using, these are great alternatives. I did also want to ask you about some of the other flours I've been seeing a lot are like almond flour or almond meal, or utilizing different types of nuts or other grains. Are those other flours also good alternatives, or do you find that they don't work as great as, say, rye or buckwheat?
From my research, at least with almonds, because almonds require, and this is mostly in when I've been researching like plant milks, because almonds take up so much water, it might not be the most sustainable switch, specifically almonds. But yes, I do sometimes use almond flour. And again, kind of in a 50-50 blend. Let's say you're making pancakes or something. Almond flour pancakes are delicious. So you can definitely just start with a 50-50 mix. Really of any alternative flour, you can start, using your normal flour, but add in something. And almond flour is super nutritious too, so that would bump up the nutrition in your baked good too.
Okay, good to know. So I hear a lot of great techniques so far in terms of swapping out just a portion of your flour, just trying a bit of a different mix that are out there and kind of seeing what tastes good, what is better for the environment. I also have been seeing a wave of people on social media and TikTok that are making their own bread and sourdough starters. So, can you tell me what is so special about sourdough?
Oh, what isn't special about sourdough? Oh my gosh. Yes, a ton of people picked it up throughout the pandemic as kind of a hobby. And also, I mean, some people, this is a little silly, but some people think of it as almost their little pet. They name it, they feed it every day.
I
Okay, I'm
have
one of those
seen that.
people.
Oh my gosh, I love that.
Yeah, and it is, I mean, first of all, it's delicious. Really, nothing tastes better than a fresh loaf of sourdough bread that you just made yourself. And then it's also completely self-sustaining. So, as long as you feed it a little bit of water and flour, and you don't even have to feed it every day necessarily, it'll live. I mean, hypothetically, it'll live forever. It'll be here forever. So it's low to no waste. You can use the discard to make really good recipes like sourdough pancakes, sourdough crackers, something that doesn't need as much rise can be just made with like the sourdough starter that you were gonna throw out. So it's really low waste, and of course less plastic packaging because you're not buying as much bread and yeast in plastic.
So, I mean, this is so fascinating to me. I don't think I've ever made a sourdough starter, but it is basically, can you explain what you have to do to create the starter? And what ingredients you need and how you go from the starter to actually making the bread. Like, what does that process look like?
Yes, so really technically all you need is flour and water. You start with equal amounts of flour and generally all-purpose flour, and then just keep feeding it flour and water every day until it kind of starts to smell yeasty, it starts to bubble, it starts to kind of look alive, and then it's ready to use and ready to make bread with it. It should double in size from when you fed it up until about 8 hours later. It should be about doubled in size. And that's when it's ready to use in your bread recipe, which again is really just the simplest sourdough recipe is your sourdough starter, flour, water, and salt. And that's really all you need. So it really is so simple and low waste, and again, it tastes amazing.
Is there a specific flower that's your go-to?
Yes, I always look for unbleached and unbromated flour. So unbleached flour is flour that has never been treated with chlorine or other bleaching agents. And unbromated flour is flour that hasn't been treated with bromide, which is a dough conditioner. So unbromated flour can have a weaker gluten structure, but it tastes better and it's never been treated with chemicals. And you can absolutely use them interchangeably. And that's what I look for. In particular, I generally use King Arthur bread flour and all-purpose flour. It's never been bleached or bromated. So that's what I use.
Yeah, I was about to say, I have seen that term unbromated, but I never knew what that meant. So thank you for clarifying that and kind of digging deeper into what those terms really mean. So I'm also curious to know, what do you look for to know if your sourdough has gone bad?
It's pretty easy to tell, luckily, if it's gone bad. You basically only want your sourdough to be kind of a brownish, grayish color, or kind of an off-white. If you start to see colors of the rainbow, any kind of blues, greens, pinks, there's probably mold in there, and
oh,
you definitely
boy.
Want to get rid of it.
Yes.
That's never happened to me. That's fairly uncommon. So I get a lot of questions about, I ruined my sourdough. I killed it. And I almost always say, you probably didn't. You just need to feed it. It's probably fine. It is actually very hard to kill sourdough. So, but yeah, colors of the rainbow are always bad.
Okay, that's definitely good to know. Colorful sourdough, not a good thing.
Right.
Is there also a time frame typically of with the amount of days it takes to make the starter from start to finish, or does it kind of vary on temperature and different circumstances?
It does vary. It varies depending on the humidity in your air, how much water you used, all kinds of different variables. But you should expect to see some activity after about 5 to 7 days of feeding it daily.
Okay.
And then you'll probably be able to use it in a bread recipe. So it's at that doubled in size peak that I was talking about after about 12 to 14 days. So it can be a process. You can also buy commercially produced sourdough starters, and I have done that before and it worked great. That way they're ready. That kind of thing is ready within like 4 to 5 days. So you don't have to wait as long.
All right. This is honestly like a really sounds like a very fun experiment that everyone can do at their own homes, and it's very low cost. So having to avoid all of the packaging and having the experience of making your own bread is really special, I think. And, you know, anyone can give that a shot. So that's a really cool tip to share. And I'm honestly inspired to make my own sourdough starter now, which I, for a long time, was thinking maybe that's not something that I'd be good at. But I'm curious now to know, what did you name your sourdough?
I've had a couple. One was Sally the sourdough.
Oh, I love that.
And I've also had Lucy.
Aww.
So they were
That's actually really cute.
Yes, and it is a really fun it's just a fun hobby. And I can get you set up.
Okay, well, you're my go-to person now. Anyone listening, you know, reach out to Joy for your
yes.
sourdough starters. Well, we also know that perhaps one of the most popular appliances for baking is the oven. And I understand that there are greener ways of using our ovens. So what are your top tips for making sure we are as energy efficient as possible?
Yeah, so speaking of sourdough, you can plan your baking. Let's say you have a big day of baking. You're going to bake some sourdough, or you're going to make some cookies, all kinds of different things. You can plan ahead of time and start with items like your crusty sourdough bread that require a really high heat, and then drop the temperature down for something like cookies, pies, things like that. And then you can even use the residual heat after the oven has been turned off for something like drying out meringues or re-crisping pie shells or roasting fruit or something like that. So you can really utilize the oven temperature to your advantage. So that's one tip. Plan ahead, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The rubber gaskets around the edges of your oven door can wear down and break down over time, and that will let heat out. So you really want to make sure that the rubber gaskets around the edges of your oven door are flush when the door is closed, and you can replace those yourself or have someone replace them. But yeah, that is a big heat leecher, is those gaskets.
Yeah, I would never think about that.
Yeah. And then last one is just don't peek before your baked good is done. It's not only good for your baked goods to be in there the whole time. Like if you open the oven and let out some heat, a cake, for example, a really delicate cake could fall and you'll just have a dip in the middle of your cake. So, but it also lets a lot of heat out, as much as 25 degrees, even with a really quick peak.
Wow.
And then that'll increase your energy consumption to have to heat it back up to the 350 degrees or whatever. So yeah, don't peek.
Yes, and that's something that everyone does. I
Oh
mean,
yeah,
we're
me
all
too.
guilty. Yeah, we're all
Yes.
guilty of peeking, and that's what the oven light is for, people. So
Exactly.
if you don't have a working oven light, that's definitely the thing to fix that peak problem.
Definitely. And that actually reminds me, keep your oven clean. Number one, so you can see in it with the light on. And number two, it really does help the energy efficiency if you keep it clean. If it's really crusty in there, it won't heat up as well.
That's actually, yeah, something great to point out. We definitely have seen those nasty ovens with not so great views of what you're baking inside. So definitely pay attention to all of the things that Joy just mentioned. I especially am impressed with the idea of, cooking kind of in levels or in batches so that throughout the day, you are putting in items in the oven that gradually are going to decrease in temperature. That's such a great idea for at least like the days that you are doing batch cooking and meal prep and wanting to put as much, food away as possible, but having it so that the energy that's being produced and the heat that's being produced is actually being utilized to the maximum. So, and optimizing that the energy environment. So, wonderful ideas being shared here.
Exactly.
And in terms of purchasing ingredients, how do you suggest folks go about doing this in a more sustainable way? Are there other ingredient swaps that you recommend or tips for, buying different things that might support sustainable practices in the kitchen?
Yeah, there are a few ingredient alternatives that you can look into, definitely as far as milk alternatives. Plant-based milks in general across the board produce fewer greenhouse gases, use less water, and require a lot less land when compared to dairy milk. So even just switching to any plant-based milk is already a more sustainable choice than dairy milk. Soy and oat milk seem to have the smallest environmental footprint. They take little water to grow and have low emissions.
Wow. And do you notice a big difference in flavor when it comes to swapping out milks and baking? Because I'm definitely a plant-based eater and I've been using a lot of non-dairy milks, but I do notice that depending on the milk you use, sometimes the taste does shift a lot. So I'm wondering, are there, ideas you have in regards to which ones might be better in terms of some that are more creamier than others or some that are more subtle in flavor and not as noticeable?
For me, that's oat milk across the board. It's creamier. It can be a little bit sweeter than the other, like oat and almond. Sometimes it can be sweeter. And milk is like dairy milk is sweet, so you are lacking that like sweetness in other plant-based milks. So you could even, I mean, you could add a little bit of maple syrup to your oat milk to sweeten it a tiny bit and kind of mimic that flavor. But yeah, I find that oat milk is my choice for the closest taste to dairy milk.
Right. And I feel like it is taking over the non-dairy trend in terms
Seems like
of,
it.
yeah, in the grocery stores and everything. It's a oat milk takeover in the dairy aisle. So
Yeah, which I'm happy about.
yeah, seems to be a popular choice. And I guess for many reasons in terms of environmental, impact and the taste and flavor. So that seems like a very good choice for overall usage. And I'm curious to know also in terms of some of the other equipment or materials that you use in the kitchen, are there other things that you recommend doing for folks that, they might not think about when baking in the kitchen and trying to save on materials or choose items that are more sustainable than others.
Yeah, so one easy thing to get rid of completely, which, well, relatively easy, is single-use plastic. So things like, you know, plastic wrap can be replaced with beeswax wraps. I don't know if you have a Tupperware container that doesn't have a lid anymore. Like, I think we all do. They make these things that they look exactly like shower caps. And they're just, you just put the elastic around the container and it acts just like a lid. I really like those.
Yes, I have those myself.
Yeah, those are great alternatives. Things like dough rising buckets with a kitchen towel over them rather than plastic wrap. Yeah, there's all kinds of alternatives for single-use plastics, luckily on the market now.
Yeah, that's great. We are seem to be so much drowning, I guess, that we just there's plastic everywhere in our grocery stores, in our kitchens, in our restaurants. And it's just something that we unfortunately are now seeing in our food because of the breakdown of plastics that are being taken up into our water streams and then eventually our fish and eventually some other animals. So it's a very big item that, you know, luckily now we have a lot of alternatives that can replace it. But yeah, it's a great thing to know in terms of, you know, what kinds of plastic alternatives actually exist for the kitchen. So you mentioned beeswax wraps, and those shower caps are really useful. And not just, I guess, other paper products I've seen out there too. And I think also there are some people that reuse their parchment paper. Is that right?
You can reuse your parchment paper until it is falling apart. I always see people throwing it away after one or two uses, and man, I just wipe it off and keep going. You know, up to 10 times sometimes. If I'm especially if I'm making like big batches of cookies, I basically use one or two pieces of parchment, and that's it for the whole dozens and dozens of cookies. So I highly recommend that.
Can you also reuse, do you recommend reusing foil as well? Because that's something that I often do. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I just feel like, you know, it can be reused because it's a pretty durable material as well.
Yeah, actually, that's a good one. Yep, I definitely reuse foil. Maybe not quite as many times as the parchment paper, but because you can see the parchment paper breaking down and I don't know about the foil, but yeah, I definitely reuse it.
Awesome. Well, Joy, what advice do you want to leave our listeners with, especially for the folks who are perfectionists or need a bit more guidance on venturing into the world of sustainable baking?
Yeah, and I'm, as a baker, I'm a total perfectionist. I understand that. But you really, when it comes to sustainability, I think this goes across the board. Don't worry about being absolutely perfect all the time. Don't worry about changing every habit you have right away. You can totally focus on one or two small changes at a time. You can start baking your own sourdough bread and reusing that parchment paper, and that you've already helped a little bit. So, you know, and every change that you make, no matter how small it is, all those changes are cumulative. They do add up. So just keep that in mind and yeah, have a ton of fun baking.
Yes, I love all those ideas. And honestly, the advice you just gave is applicable for anyone that's not even baking. You know, not worrying about being a perfectionist all the time, focusing on small changes. And those, you know, those definitely add up at the end of the day. I'd like to extend my heartfelt thanks to you, Joy, for sharing your invaluable insights and tips guiding us towards a more sustainable and delicious baking experience. Thank you so much for joining us on our show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And to everyone listening, don't forget to check out our show notes for additional resources, recipes, and further information on sustainable baking. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, rate, and review Fresh Take to help us spread the word about sustainable living practices. Join us next time for more fresh perspectives and innovative ideas. Until then, keep whisking, kneading, and baking sustainably. Thank you for tuning in.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Florida Organic Growers is a 501c3 nonprofit organization. So to keep our content available and free to the public, we need your help. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen, and consider making a tax-deductible donation or become a sponsor. Learn more about our work and how you can become a sponsor from our website, www.foginfo.org.